From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. In the last 12 years, more than 500 children throughout the U.S. have died from heat stroke after being left in a vehicle. That includes 7 child deaths last year in Florida alone. Child safety experts say many parents wrongly believe it could never happen to them. As July 31st marks National Heat Stroke Prevention Day, we'll explore local efforts to help prevent the problem, along with helpful tips for harried parents. Plus, Southwest Florida Democrat Larry Aguilar has been campaigning to represent portions of Lee County in the race for Florida House District 79. But now the State Division of Elections says Aguilar's qualifying paperwork wasn't received on time to qualify for the election, and his name will not appear on the ballot. Aguilar contends that claim and has filed legal action against the Secretary of State. We'll take a closer look at the case and Aguilar's prospects for getting back in the race. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Democrat Larry Aguilar has been campaigning in the race for Florida's State House District 79 seat, which includes northeastern portions of Lee County, Lehigh Acres, and a portion of North Fort Myers. Incumbent Matt Caldwell faces fellow Republican challenger Matt Miller in the August 24th primary election. Whoever wins the primary would have had to face Aguilar in the November general election, but the Florida Division of Elections has kept Aguilar's name off the ballot, saying his qualifying paperwork didn't reach state election offices in time for the June 20th deadline. Aguilar has filed a lawsuit against Secretary of State Ken Detzner, alleging his qualifying documents were received on time and were mishandled, perhaps by elections officers. Joining me now for a closer look at the case is Larry Aguilar himself. Thanks for joining us in studio this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And we did invite the Florida Division of Elections to join our conversation today as well, or at least provide a statement or respond to questions regarding Larry Aguilar's case, but received no response to our requests. I do invite our listeners to join the conversation, though. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Larry Aguilar, first of all, tell us generally about your efforts to represent Florida's State House District 79. Before this business with the June 20th qualifying deadline, how long had you been campaigning?
Man, for over a year. For over a year. I have been essentially working in the community for about 2.5 years and realized that there is no representation. If you happen to be African-American or Latino like I am, and I think in everything that we like to do in government, there should be some balance. The founders of this country thought about that even way back then, and that's how I decided that I needed to enter the race.
And I know your background, besides being in banking and finance, has a lot to do with education as well. Was that a part, or did that play a part in why you wanted to represent?
Number one reason, I think Lee County happens to have a rich history of segregation as it pertains to our schools. And even today, our schools are comprised of 54% minority children, and yet the administration is only about 10% minority. So there's a disparity there, and I think that that is illustrated by the lack of achievement in the minority sectors.
And before discovering that, the Division of Elections had determined your qualifying paperwork wasn't there on time to enter this race, was that any sort of issue that you had anticipated, or did this really come as a shock?
You know, it's interesting. That day when I went to the post office, my stepdaughter, Lauren, took a picture of me and actually wrote on it, "He's qualified." Little did I know that that word was going to become so important in my life,
right,
for the last 40 days or so.
Well, let's go through. Can you take us through a chronological timeline of basically, the facts that that you do have documented evidence for regarding this case? I guess first of all, what I want to ask is, what is involved in qualifying? What does that paperwork consist of?
Well, there's a lengthy period. You actually can start sending your work in on June 2nd. The qualifying period begins June 16th. and it ends on the 20th at noontime. You're generally supposed to send in your financial disclosures, your oath, and your check. There are other documents that, because I was already declared a candidate, the divisions of elections already had. So I did not have to include those. For instance, the appointment of a treasurer and some other documentation listing me as a candidate. Those were already there. But for that day, the only thing I needed to do was disclosure, check, and oath. And I sent that in a package on Tuesday, June 17th. Original qualifying period started on the 16th. So for those people, some folks question, why did I wait so long? I didn't wait long.
It's a five-day window there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And when I went to the post office, the individual that took my parcel told me it will be there in 2 days. So I had absolutely no reason to think that I was in peril.
And as we've mentioned, the deadline for any candidate to get their paperwork into the Division of Elections was June 20th at noon. Mm-hmm. How did you submit your paperwork?
I did it registered mail, return receipt.
So that's why we have some of the documentation that we do have.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. That parcel of mail was tracked along the way from the minute that I went to the window to the minute that it was placed in the mailbox for the DOE.
And, you know, according to the U.S. Postal Service records, when was your qualifying paperwork available to be picked up by the State Division of Elections?
It was made available at 8:44 a.m. on the 19th, on Thursday, the 19th, or a day before the qualifying period ended.
Is that when they could have – I was under the impression it wasn't actually in their mailbox until the following morning.
No. You know, and that's – I think on the tracking manifest. Mm-hmm. It shows 9:46 available for pickup. That was just the next opportunity when they checked their inventory. That item, if you look at the manifest, it'll say that it was sorted and completed on the 19th at 8:44. And I made a visit to that particular post office and spoke to the manager and had him tell me exactly what happened with my package. And he says, well, it became available and was in their mailbox on Thursday at 8:44.
So it's Thursday. It's the day before the qualifying deadline. You've got this documentation that everything should be in order. No surprises. Then what happens?
Well, on Friday, a little bit after 12:20, one of the individuals involved in my campaign called me, with some concern that everybody's name was turning qualified except mine. And, you know, I gave it a little bit of time before I decided to call the DOE. And a gentleman answered the phone and said, well, if your document isn't here right now, you're not qualified. And that's when all the flags and bells and whistles started to really go off.
All right. Well, tell us about your conversations with, you know, different people at the Division of Elections. I'm particularly interested in a mail clerk who I guess we can only identify right now as David. We don't know his last name.
We've actually found out his last name. One of the reporters that has been has a keen interest in finding out what's going to take place. His name is Embleton. Last name is Embleton. But I made numerous calls. Obviously, I was distraught. When I got to David, he was the second person I called. When they told me if my documents were not there that I was not qualified, I said, well, I got to call the mailroom. And what stands out about my conversation with David was that he mentioned he never picked up mail that day.
And Thursday or Friday?
On Friday. And I thought, well, that's a little bit unusual. Today is the qualifying day.
Perhaps one of the most important days for that office, I would imagine.
Absolutely. For the whole year, that's the most important day. And he also mentioned that no one had advised him that there was anything extraordinary that was happening that day. So it kind of, you know, raised a flag. And, of course, when I hung up with him, I called the qualifying office again. And they just kept telling me, if your documents are not here, dude, you're out of luck, mm-hmm. essentially.
Do you find it odd that, you know, on the date of the qualifying deadline, the mail clerk wouldn't be advised that there was anything particularly special about that day or might not even go to check the mail?
Totally. The other interesting thing is that they've changed their story consistently, you know, and I try not to think that there's any conspiracies here. People make mistakes. I worked for almost 10 years within the Federal Reserve System, and we used the same sorting mechanism that the Postal Service uses. And timestamping things was very important in my life, you know, and deadlines. And I would think that there are records that show when someone goes to the post office and picks up the mail for the DOE. There are records that show when they come in and deliver mail. So it would have been easy for them to say, you know what, Mr. Aguilar, we're going to check and find out exactly what happened here. But I can submit to you that at no time did anyone tell me, we're going to take a look at this and see if there was an error. Every single person that I spoke to at the DOE, all they kept telling me was, your documents are not here. Just go away. Just go away. You know, and it's just inconsistent with an agency that performs a job, a service for the citizens, for the taxpayers, that it appears to have no accountability. Even as we speak, there hasn't been a specific reason other than your documents were not here. You're not qualified. You know, there's no proof, nothing. They haven't shown anything. And it...
I know that, you know, other reporters who have been following this case have spoken with DOE officials and gotten stories that are different from David Embleton's. I'd heard that the mail on Friday, June 20th, was actually checked once in the morning and then again in the afternoon, which, of course, is completely contradictory to your conversation with the mail clerk.
Absolutely. And when I look, I like to keep things very simple, you know. And the only person that appears to be saying the truth is David. He said he didn't pick up the mail. And if you are to listen to the final outcome from the DOE, they picked up the parcel on Monday, the 23rd, so they say. So it would imply that no one went to pick it up on Friday because it was there since Thursday, right?
Right.
But there's something a little bit more damning against them, and that is a letter that surfaced from Christy Bronson, who is the supervisor for qualifying and records. And in that letter, she states that she actually had my check on the 19th. Now, you can't get the check if you don't have the parcel because they were all part of the same shipment.
That was going to be my question for you. How would they have the check unless it was sent in a separate – this was all sent in the same parcel.
And this is where – you know, now I have to go to the courts to get some relief because we need the answer to that question.
We're talking with Democrat Larry Aguilar, who is currently filing a lawsuit against the Secretary of State regarding his status as a non-qualified candidate in the State House district race for District 79. You can connect with us with your phone calls to 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. I would think at the very least, some sort of camera surveillance at the post office might also be available to determine if someone did actually or did not check the mail on the qualifying deadline, June 20th. Is that something that you have pursued?
Absolutely. I made a trip to Tallahassee. You know, I had to find out for myself what the heck, you know, happened here, and had an opportunity to visit the postal office where my package landed, and they have cameras. I spoke to the general manager, and he even invited me into his office, and he was very concerned that his office was being made the scapegoat. And at this point, I say, John, I am going to get some further evidence, video evidence of what took place on that day. They have told me that it exists, and we should get some remedy here. I don't think that this is one that we need to continue to scratch our heads over. I've lost 40 days over an issue that could have probably taken just a few minutes to really correct.
At what point did you determine that, you know, in order to get this resolved, you were going to have to take legal action?
Once the Democratic Party, the council for the Florida Party, addressed them in a letter with evidence and also case law indicating that once that parcel was placed in their mailbox, because they don't accept mail at their building, that that I was in. Once they rejected that, we knew that, hey, we – and actually, Mr. Brian Holland, who is one of the administrators over at the DOE, in a letter and also in a phone conversation, a conference call, said that if I was going to get remedy, I was going to have to do it through the court system.
Well, let's take a phone call from Paul in Fort Myers. Paul, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks. Did you have a comment or question for us today?
Yeah, I do, and it just struck me. Anytime I send anything off to the patent office, to IRS, to any governmental agency, I get tracking and get return receipt, or I at least get tracking on anything I do. And the question in my mind is, why didn't he get tracking? Because that is definitive. There is no question. There is no anything. I mean, it's bang. It's there. It either was or it wasn't. And if they screwed up in the system, that's their problem. Shame on them, not him.
And you're 100% correct, and there is tracking, and that was one of the things that was in my favor from the inception, the fact that at every turn, when someone touches that package, there is tracking on it, and it's very clear, and you can't really change it because it's a electronic system. So you're 100% correct, and in fact, that is the strongest evidence that I have on my side.
Well, because if they show a track that it was received at that building or delivered at that building at that point in time, it's their problem, not yours.
That's right. But and herein lies where we sit today. They're not looking at that. They're discounting the same information that you think is vital. They're discounting it. They're not even looking at it. And that is the egregious part of this error.
Yeah, I think, Paul, what he's telling us also is a lot of the exhibits or the evidence in the lawsuit actually come from this tracking data that he did do.
Okay, well then, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty bogus on their side, because I guarantee you, if they were the ones doing the tracking, they'd be screaming like wounded banshees.
I agree with you. I agree with you. So I need your support, Paul. I need your support.
Well, you got. I just can't. This just boggles my mind. You know, Republican or Democrat, doesn't make any difference who it is, but they need to accept the data that's available and honor that. I mean,
Paul, you just said something that's very key to this whole thing. I think the listeners need to understand that this is, in my estimation, this is not a Democrat or Republican issue. I think that this is one where it goes right down to the core of our Constitution, that any eligible American that wants to serve their community in whatever role, our Constitution allows us that. And I think that to negate just one person, I think it goes against our values and principles. And this is one where I have gotten quite a lot of strong support from Republicans that find this to be just a little bit too much to take.
Well, I can understand it. To me, this is absolutely egregious. I just can't fathom that. It's totally irresponsible on the part of the people. And like you said about the mail clerk, I mean, come on, that's the most important day of the year, and you don't go down and check the mail? You've got to be kidding me.
Paul, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. And you can join our conversation as well with Democrat Larry Aguilar, who's currently fighting to have the State Division of Elections recognize him as a qualified candidate in the election for Florida's State House District 79. You can call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Larry, I was hoping we'd have your co-counsel, Peter Burkett, with us, but he wasn't able to be here. But perhaps you can tell us, when it comes to this lawsuit, besides the evidence provided, is there legal precedence cited in the suit?
You know, that's the thing, that this happens quite frequently. And therefore, there is rich and very specific case law on what's happened to me. And the one thing that judges have consistently said is that once the intended parcel, the mail, is in the mailbox for the intended department or office, it's considered delivered. So we went back as far as 1954 and as recently as 2013 to look at situations where cases like this have come up. And consistently, it would appear that if we get our day in court, that I will be back on the ballot.
So you're saying there is legal precedence here for this. You're basically saying it's not a legal gray area in terms of what counts as the paperwork being there. It doesn't matter if it's physically in the building or in their post office box. It's considered delivered if it's available for them to get in their mailbox.
That is correct. That is correct. And I think another part that the judge or the judges in those instances have taken into consideration is the due diligence on the part of the person making sending the parcel. And I think in my case, it would show that if I sent it on the 17th and it was already in Tallahassee on the 18th, ready for pickup on the 19th, that I met that due diligence.
I spoke with Bridge Templin with the AFL-CIO recently. And he told me that, quote, I am not aware of a pattern of errors at the Division of Elections, end quote. And kind of going on to say that, you know, while he thinks the system could be better overall and it is somewhat onerous, rather, he thinks the division does a pretty good job for the most part. You're aware of other cases where this has happened just this year.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. While I was in Tallahassee, I happened to visit the office of the AFL-CIO and one of the individuals there, one of the attorneys, had pointed out to me that there were 8 other cases added to mine where someone was contesting the qualifying period as to whether they made it or not. So I think, and I would think it stands to reason that if you've got well over 100 individuals sending mail and it must be a hectic day. But yeah, 8 or 9 people, I would imagine that's probably par for the course on most years for them.
Well, you know, Rich Templin also told me he recommends for kind of any candidate, even though Tallahassee's, I guess pretty geographically far away from many parts of Florida, just by the way our state is shaped, but that he really recommends folks, take the trip up there, go to Tallahassee, meet with the Division of Election employees in person, and they'll work with you to get through any kind of problems and perhaps avoid situations like this. I have to ask, did it occur to you to do that, and why did you not do that?
Not at all. I think, I'm an experienced person. Mail documents to just so many places around the United States and in other parts of the world. I never thought that it was going to come to this. Obviously, lesson learned. The next time around, I will go to Tallahassee and deliver it in person. I can guarantee you that. However, I think that we need to, in my case, I am going to say that the United States Postal Service did everything right. I went there with an expectation, and they met that expectation, and I think that they surpassed it. They actually got it there a lot sooner than I thought. Although there are many ways to do things, I think that being a first-time candidate, I took their instructions and I actually highlighted the areas that were pertinent to me, and I followed it. And I thought I did a fairly decent job of getting my parcel there on time. And if I were coaching someone else, I think that I would do exactly as the AFL-CIO has intimated. I would tell them that this is a process where you have to make absolutely certain that your documents are there. Probably a trip there is the most consistent way.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Peter Burkett, your co-counsel on this case, he has experience running in the past. He had run for both State House and State Senate in the past. Mm-hmm. And he's actually come out of retirement to work on this case. I hate to ask you to speak for him, but why do you think he came out of retirement to help you out with this pro bono?
Well, I can tell you that the person that scrutinized my actions the most was Peter. As a former candidate, he would have probably done it a lot sooner. However, when he saw the evidence, he told me that he would not leave a fellow candidate stranded when it was evident that I got my parcel of mail in there on time. So I think that that's really what energized him to help me, the fact that it would be it's un-American to keep someone out that has met all of the qualifications to be in the race.
And what has not meeting the qualification deadlines, according to the Division of Elections, meant for the campaign?
Well,
obviously you can't continue to campaign.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, I'd be breaking the law. So essentially, they put me out of business. That day, on the 20th at noontime, I was out of business. As it pertains to fundraising and all of those things, I've lost 40 days. So my opponent, as a matter of fact, he's got signs all over District 79 and elsewhere. And again, he has an advantage over me now, because even if they put my name back on the ballot, the amount of time that I have lost and the amount of money that I have lost, when he has an advantage in all those areas anyways, as being an incumbent, really puts me at a very strong disadvantage.
Have you heard any word on progress regarding the suit that you have filed?
Thus far, we filed, as of Thursday last week, we filed an immediate injunction for Judge Keith Kyle to take action. And as I speak to you today, there's no action taking place. I communicated with most of the people that follow me and support me on Facebook to call his office and begin the process of getting some closure here. This is not a case that we need to litigate next year. We should have been in a courtroom last week. We could have gotten some kind of action from the court probably the next day. If Judge Kyle was in session, he could have heard the case the next day. It doesn't happen very often, but this is an emergency motion that was filed.
Are you concerned that this could potentially drag on beyond the date of the November general election?
You know, John, that's a very important question, and I have to tell you that I've had to think of that conclusion. The one thing I can tell you as well is that regardless of what happens, I'm going to have my day in court. They may not allow me to be in this year's election, and I may not have the power to do anything about it. However, I will have the power to continue to voice my dismay, and I will file another lawsuit if I am not in this election, whether it be a suit against the divisions of elections here locally or through Tallahassee. We haven't determined that yet, but there will be other legal action that will require the divisions of elections locally and in the state to answer as to why a viable candidate was not able to run in the race.
I would think that the local supervisor of elections might be exempt from that kind of lawsuit, just based on they're taking their directives from Tallahassee. You know, Sharon Harrington can't put someone's name on the ballot who the state division that, you know, kind of oversees that tells her she can't put on that name on.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. However, I think that in the law, there are many ways that you can get remedy. The way that they're harming me, John, is in so many different ways. And not only that, just think of the supporters, the volunteers, the donors, the folks that had a reasonable hope that there will be a difference of opinions in this year's election. What about them? They're being discounted as well. So I would say, and I want to reemphasize that thus far, the folks at the local divisions of elections have been nothing less than marvelous and supportive in understanding where I find myself today.
Well, thank you so much, Larry Aguilar. We are out of time for today's show, but thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Democrat Larry Aguilar is currently fighting to have his name placed on the ballot as a qualified candidate in the race for Florida's State House District 79 seat. There's more information at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Luke Martin, Richard Cinqui, and Topher Forges. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM.